At 12 p.m. today, Donald Trump makes history as he becomes the 45th president of the United States. What follows is a weekend of inauguration pageantry, a parade, several inaugural balls, even fireworks. Trump joins what is a small elite club.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, do solemnly swear.
I, Richard Bill House Nixon, do solemnly swear.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear.
I, George Herbert Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
The presidential inauguration has a rich history dating back to George Washington. Here to talk more about it is historian Kenneth C. Davis. He's the author of the Don't Know Much About series of books, and he joins us now from New York. Welcome, Ken.
Good morning, Kathy. Always a pleasure to join on Second Thought.
Thank you so much. So how have the presidential inaugurations changed over time from a basic swearing-in ceremony to the kind of multi-event extravaganza it has now become?
Well, it evolved, certainly, over the years. Of course, Washington took the first swearing-in in New York City, the temporary capital, notably in April of 1789, and we can come back to the change in dates. It's a significant one. He wore a suit made of homegrown USA, made in the USA linen, and so that kind of sense of America, make it here, has been around from the very beginning. Interesting, that's still an issue today. Washington, of course, took the first oath of office, and this is where a bit of legend comes in. The oath of office is, of course, laid out in the Constitution. It does not include the words, "So help me God." Tradition, legend has it that Washington said that. There's no evidence that he did. In fact, it's not until much later in the 19th century that the words, "So help me God," became routine. Routinely used in the inauguration and the presidential oath.
So people just think it is in the Constitution.
Most people think it's there because it's usually offered by whoever's administering the oath, usually the Chief Justice, but is clearly not in the Constitution. In fact, the Constitution says that no religious oath shall be required of any government official.
And so it was a kind of a small event, as you were talking about, and then all of a sudden evolved. When did it start becoming this major mega extravaganza?
Well, it's interesting if you go back and look at Washington's first. There were fireworks, what they called illuminations at the time. There was a throng of people in they called it New York then. It's really Lower Manhattan, right at Federal Hall, across the street from Wall Street and the New York Stock Exchange today, of course. So it was a pretty big deal back then. In fact, when Washington arrived in New York City a few days before for the inauguration, he was greeted by throngs, and boats came out, and there were choirs singing to him. So it was a pretty awesome moment. So the swearing in and the inauguration has always had this pomp and circumstance about it. It's changed a good deal over the years, of course. Interestingly, we're talking about boycotts by politicians. Two presidents famously ducked out of the inauguration. John Adams skipped Thomas Jefferson's inauguration. The tradition of the president staying hadn't really been established. And then John Quincy Adams ducked out on Andrew Jackson's inauguration, which was perhaps the most riotous in history, as crowds of Westerners, kind of rough-hewn Westerners, came pouring into Washington to celebrate the inauguration of Andrew Jackson, the man they saw as their kind of guy, an outsider, of course, an anti-elitist, of course.
So not the first time that some presidents have decided not to show up.
Most presidents have shown up. On this idea of other politicians not showing up is of course getting a lot of attention. It is not unprecedented. I believe that several Republicans, prominent Republicans, ducked out of Obama's inauguration on both occasions.
What are the most key inaugurations in your mind?
Well, I think you have to start with Washington because it was the first and it did establish so many precedents. Beyond that, I would look first at Abraham Lincoln in 1861. This was the moment, of course, we talk about the nation being divided today. When Lincoln takes the oath of office in March of 1861, seven states have already left the Union, speaking of protests and boycotts. And of course, a month later, the nation was at war. So that has to be to stand as the most significant inaugural moment in our history. And of course, Lincoln gave the first of two what I consider greatest inaugural addresses in American history. The other one that's kind of trivially notable is William Henry Harrison, who famously gave the longest inaugural address, something like 3 hours. And the legend has it that he did it without a hat on and it was cold. He caught a cold and died of pneumonia 3 weeks later. That's probably not the case. He may have died perhaps of an underlying cause or maybe something like typhoid. But he didn't catch a cold on Inauguration Day because he didn't wear a hat. So let's dispense with that myth.
Well, these myths, they kind of perpetuate themselves, right?
They do.
There's also a tradition where presidents and their successors drive together or go together in Inauguration Day and this peaceful exchange of power. And we have a clip of tape from Jimmy Carter, who was describing his time together with Gerald Ford on Inauguration Day.
We had a nice, pleasant chat, mainly small talk. There was no point in feeling any animosity toward the Carters.
The ride that I had with me and President Ford and their wives, we did the best we could to make pleasant conversation, but there's a certain strain there.
Is that a uniquely American tradition?
I can't speak for what happens around the rest of the world, but it's certainly an American tradition and has been for a long time. As I mentioned, it's only the two Adamses who are, as far as I know, apart from presidents who had died and obviously couldn't be there for their successors' inauguration. This has, you know, been a piece of the peaceful transition that is part of our past. And I'm sure that there have been awkward moments and maybe long, embarrassed silences or wives making small talk to smooth it all over. But it is certainly a moment that we see as representative of this idea of peaceful transfer of power. This year, I think, you know, because everything about this election and this president-elect has been so unprecedented, it's kind of all bets are off. But I'm quite certain that the car ride with President Obama today will be interesting if we could hear a tape of that one someday.
I'm sure it would be very interesting. A couple seconds we have left. Is there something that perhaps was the least known about an inauguration?
Well, one thing, favorite moment of mine, being a Robert Frost lover, he was, of course, the first poet invited to speak at an inauguration in 1961 for Kennedy. He couldn't see because there had been so much snow and it was a bright, sunny day. He couldn't read the text that he had written for that day. And so he recited from memory a poem, The Gift Outright. And most people think that that was the inaugural poem, but he'd actually written a poem specifically for President Kennedy.
I'm sorry, we are out of time right now, but thank you so much for joining us. That's Kenneth C. Davis. He's the author of Don't Know Much About series of books. Thanks so much.